Hey, John.
Hi, Greg.
What's going on? How are you? Can you hear me?
Hear you now.
Ah, nice.
I think when I put the headset on, the volume went to zero.
Okay. How's things with you, brother?
Not too bad. And you? Look
Yeah,
like we
not
had a
bad.
nice cookout at Gavin's.
Oh, I wasn't there, man. No, that's him taking the piss out of me.
What?
That's him making fun of me. So that
Oh.
I wasn't there. That's a photo that he took of me 2 years ago in Marbella, and he brings it out every once in a while to make fun.
I was a sucker.
Yeah, you fell for it, little bugger. He pulls that one out every once in a while. It goes with him everywhere. I was in Italy with him last year. Do you know who? Oh, what's the name of the cartoon that has the character called Gru in it?
Called what?
Gru. Let me find him. That's it in Minions. So this is what Dan always makes fun after that photo. This is who they claim I look like.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is what I have to put up with.
Is that a British cartoon?
No, I don't think so. No, I think it's a. I don't think it's Disney, but it's like it's one of the big companies that does it. Despicable, what's it called? Despicable Me. Gru.
It's from Despicable Me. Okay.
Yeah. Very rude. Very rude and very mean.
Since we don't have kids, I've never been into that series.
No, nor me. I didn't know who it was before he made fun of me for it, but now I do anyway.
Yeah, this is my vegetables, chicken, and sweet potato.
Is your lunch meal, right?
I've got a rehearsal tonight, so I'll be leaving in the middle. And then I have my yogurt meal packed to eat before rehearsal.
Nice. Good work. Hey, Jared. What's going on, Mike? How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
How's the weather where all you guys are, man? It's proper heat wave in the UK.
It's wonderful here.
Stinking hot over here. It's like 95 degrees. It was yesterday, anyway.
Don't be that Brit that moans because it's too warm, though, Greg. The amount of conversations I've had with people that say when it's cold, oh, it's too cold, that it's too warm. Don't be that person. Just embrace it, mate. We don't get it very.
I don't moan about the cold, man. Genuinely, I do moan about the heat, though. Like, it can't be above 30 degrees in the UK. It can't be.
Well,
We're just not made for it.
that's the Irish in you, though, isn't it? Kind of turn red rather than brown, right?
Well, you can see I do have a little bit of a red complexion the last couple of days. It's either that or the high blood pressure. I'm not sure. Hey, Paul. Got a few more. The boss is due, so Gav will be here any minute. That's right, John. It is too much. Hold on, I need to move places. Oh, okay, guys, before we get started, anybody got any wins that they want to tell us over the last week? Any big changes? Any wins? Go, Dan.
Just for those of you guys that follow UK football, we call it football, you guys call it soccer. My team won the league for the first time in 22 years this year. Greg's team are now the longest serving team without a major trophy. Manchester United, just for reference, my team are Arsenal. So I am absolutely buzzing. I've got a sore back and no voice from all the shouting and screaming on Sunday.
That was not my win for the week. But I'm glad Dan's happy. That's the most important thing.
You guys know it's very rare you'll see Dan with a smile on his face, and today is that day. So you don't have to put one together today. It's totally natural today, boys.
Heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking to see. Anybody else got any wins?
I guess my win is that Monday last week, I strained a muscle in my upper quad, sort of hip flexor. I was on split squats and just got that real, I thought it was pretty bad at that pop, burning pain, drop the weights. And I was like, oh, bugger, I've torn something maybe. Or so that was Monday last week. And then, it's coming much better than I thought it would be. So it looks like more like minor strain rather than a tear. Once I iced it and over the sort of 48 hours started to go, okay, I can localize where the pain is. It's definitely sort of that upper quad, basically good on everything other than hip extension, anything where my hip's sort of moving forward into that split squat. So I was like, oh, hang on, I can go through full range of movement squatting. I can, not super heavily loaded, but I've gone from thinking a week ago, oh crap, this is pretty bad. This could knock me out, legs out for a month. A week later, I'm back in the gym. I can get through almost all my routines, deloading the legs still slightly, but it went from sort of bad limp, really like spasming. This isn't good. I might have torn something, thinking. And then a week later, I go, no, actually, I'm coming good. I'm bouncing back pretty quick. So just a win in itself that I go, hang on, I'm getting through this. This isn't a huge setback. That's a win.
Yeah, man, big win. That's huge. Nothing worse, right, than thinking, oh, is this going to be 2 weeks? Is this going to be a month? What is it? That's a huge win, Rob. Anybody else? Go on, Dan,
Oh,
sorry.
just on that point, Rob, and it's great to hear that kind of this is where exercise modification comes in, right? So when we understand anatomy and physiology and the mechanics of an exercise, right? So looking at a split squat, obviously, was it your well, it'll be either side with it being a split squat, but obviously knowing that the position that the split squat takes the quad into and especially the hip flexor into a relatively lengthened position. I always say to people when they pick up an injury, if we can isolate and pinpoint exactly what the injury is and what potentially muscles could be involved, we can always manipulate the variables. So what you'll probably find is, yes, you won't be able to exceed that full extremity in regards to that active range of the hip flexor within the split squat. So it might be kind of looking at kind of modifying your active range of split squats are still in, but there's still potential for you to be able to use other exercises to accommodate as well. I had this conversation with a client today it was, and he had a car accident, so he's kind of struggling. Well, I think the jolting movement has led to something going on with his pec, and we just spoke around modifications. And I think the general remit around injury is people think that they can't train. But if we understand and we can specify kind of the area, the range of a muscle that kind of potentially is affected, there's always modifications. So to hear that you kind of moved a few different things around and kind of from a exercise selection kind of standpoint, you're able to just be able to move everything around. That's the most important thing. And I think the biggest misconception in industry for me around injury is, oh, I'm injured, so I can't train. Whereas that actually it's a case of if we manipulate the variables and understand kind of the little bits around it, you can still train, but just modifying a few things. So to hear you've done that is awesome, mate.
Had some great feedback from Andrew as well. I absolutely spammed him. I got in the gym. Well, first day I was sort of resting and icing it. Got in the gym and I just recorded some. This is where I can go on a squat. This is how I can lift my knee up. This is what I can do in terms of, my my sort of my sort of hip cars. This is where I can get my leg to before it starts to hurt. This is how deep I can get into a split squat on this side before that, sort of pointing it out on the video. This is where it's hurting. So it's
Yeah.
good to be able to just have Andrew to bounce it off and go, this is what I can do, what I need to adjust. And that was a good mindset to go, no, I can get back in. I can still keep going in the gym.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear, mate. Great job.
Who else we got? So what other wins do we have for the week, gents? Jared, seen some good photos from you, brother. Oh, you don't have headphones, right?
Yeah, he was just looking for his headphones, Jared was.
Okay. I'll leave him alone.
I'll speak quickly. Yeah, I forgot the headphones just on the commute, but yeah, numbers are looking good. Some PBs on the lifts today. Yeah, body fat percentage dropping. So, gut's doing better since the start of the gut protocol. So, a lot of wins moving forward.
My man. Gav, what's he doing?
Mate, so we're looking to get him absolutely sliced and diced, but obviously when we started to look at a few health markers that we need to address first, that sort of dictated the type of program we had to do. What was the initial blood pressure when we first checked, Greg? Was it? It was like 140s or something like that, maybe 140s, 150s. And in a space of like 6 weeks, we got that down to like 120s over 70. So he's really right down really quick. But to get that down, we really had to think about aerobic capacity, right? So really open up the vascular network, getting the blood, getting the capillaries open up, allowing that resting heart rate to come down a little bit more parasympathetic tone stuff. And yeah, his blood pressure's come down, but we had to scale the weight training back a little bit because Jared's the type of coach. I've known Jared for a number of years now, coaching wise, and he can put the foot down and put the gas down, so to speak. So we had to rein him back on a lot of that high intensity stuff, and now we're starting to scale that back up. Now his blood pressure's in a good place, so just focusing on those things, it's just allowed body comp to take care of itself, right? Because we're focused on the right things for health. And obviously Greg's done wonders with his stool test as well, and really getting his digestive system lined back up. And I think over the next, I'd say 6 to 10 weeks, you're going to see much more dense physique, much leaner as well. So looking forward to these ones, mate.
Crushed it.
Yes.
Anyone else have any wins before we get into plans for next month?
John's hit new PRs on pull-ups.
My man, John. John's crushing it. So, what are you hitting now, John? No.
I hit 15 with my backpack on. I was goofing around and I thought, oh, let me see how many pull-ups I can do this way, not this way, but
Greg, get another 20 pounds on him, mate. Make it harder.
yeah, we're gonna have to weight you down, brother.
Time to get Jack, John.
Okay, Dan, Gav, do you have anything to add to all this before we get into it?
No, man, I'm good. Looks like everybody's winning. Did Thompson go?
No.
No. His win the past week, man. He's back in full health. He had a little bit of a coldy flu thing going on, so he's back in the mix. And I'll be going up on Saturday to see him, get some training in, making sure he's putting his foot down a little bit more. Good man. So where are we, boys? What have we got planned for these boys now, Greg?
So we're gonna go, I guess we're gonna go through what our plans are. So we're coming to the end of May. What is plan projection over the next 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? What's the expectation? What are we doing to implement what that is? And how are we tracking that over time? So who knows the 30-day goals coming up for June? Think about within that time what some of the things that may actually block that progression. So think what you need to do, what might block that progression, and what things you're going to put in place.
So Thompson, I think we know yours for sure. We'll cover that. So Thompson, your goals will be covered on Saturday as well. So I've got some specific markers we're going to cover on the weekend anyway.
Coming up to my yearly blood tests, right? Like, so it's been a bit stop and start, as Kevin was saying. So back on full meal prep this week, back on full supplement stack, back on all the peptides. So just trying to like just get back on everything full stack before, hitting it hard and hitting, everything for the blood test.
Thompson,
So what if, go ahead,
what
sorry, Gav.
would stop you doing that right now?
Not a whole lot, to be honest. I'm already back on full supplement stack, full meal prep and everything. So back on peptides. Really, it's kind of like working through, back on tracking everything as well, because I got a bit lazy in tracking stuff. But yeah, all good now.
What pushes you sideways to get lazy?
As much as I had to admit it, sometimes it's at all or nothing. So when I was like ill, wasn't doing full stack supplements and all that. I was just like trying to recover. So yeah, just getting back on it, I guess.
Yeah. So, do you think the supplements would have helped you speed up the process of being unwell?
I was still doing a bit of the sync and stuff like that, but there's a slightly different stack that Kevin shared on, recovery and stuff like that. We're gonna try a new peptide if I ever feel a bit iffy again. So yeah, just tuning the run book basically for when things happen.
Yeah, so I'll be bringing up thymus and alpha one. We'll be making sure you got in the fridge, because we'll make sure that's in place for you. So boys, thymus and alpha one is an immune regulator. So I'm a big fan of keeping some of that in the fridge just in case my kids get sick or there's something going around. I'll always start to take some of that if anybody around me starts to get sick, or if I'm, I don't know, going on a flight or something like that. I'll take some before I get on the flight, before I leave the house. And I tend to find that it shifts illness pretty quick. So I had my kids were sick about 2 weeks ago. My wife picked something up, and as I could see my daughter's coughing, my wife's getting a little bit unwell, I just took a milligram a day for about 2 to 3 days of thymus and alpha one, and nothing. I didn't get down with anything. So touch wood, I was good. So that's something I always keep in the fridge just to keep handy if there's any sickness going around or I forgot a flight or something. So I'm going to make sure Thompson gets some of that on the weekend. Yeah, man. So the next 30 days, Thompson, there's nothing stopping you hitting everything 100% unless like work comes in. So you've got a clear run at work, I think you said as well, yeah?
Yeah, until mid of next month, but that's okay. I'll deal with that.
Beauty. So we should hit all our targets in the next 30 days. So when Thompson joins in, what's the date now today? 26th, 27th? 27th. 27th of June. Thompson's going to be looking like a new man. It's got to work, Thompson boy. Who's up next? Who knows what they're working on for the next? So, Mike, do you know what your goals are for the next 30 days? What's your targets, man?
You say Mike, yeah?
Mike, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything specific. I'm just still kind of, I'm still working on my aerobics. I don't know how to explain it. I've got a resistance training day, and then I've got cardio, and my resistance training's got a couple of heavy exercises in the beginning, and then some circuit style. So some sled pushes,
Yeah.
some push press, some lunges, some kettlebell stuff, farmer's carries. Kind of just trying to keep training for high rock style stuff. So just plugging away at that. And then I got to start adding in some runs. So that's my next thing is I got to make a plan
Yes.
for adding them in, when to add them in, how much to add in and how soon, right?
Yeah. So is Andrew, and Andrew's obviously supporting you on that, yeah?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, well, probably to like just think like he's probably got this ready set to go for you, but just thinking about what sort of time you're doing for a 1K run? Because if you're doing a HYROX, that's basically a running event. Like you
Yeah,
got
pretty much, right?
stuff in the middle, which lasts a few minutes, type of thing, which can definitely kick your ass. But it's basically a running event, right? So if you're efficient at running, the goal typically with some of the HYROX guys that I've helped support in the past, and I know a few of my friends do it as well, and Fudge does this as well, Coach Chris Fudge. Like their goal is to get that 1K time down as efficiently as possible. Like if you can speed that up, so knowing that, you need to know, well, what is my current 1K time and what is the time that I need to get it down to over the next 30 days? What's that KPI? Right. In the back end, so that might be your aerobic goal. And in the back end of that as well, it might be, well, what lifts are going to help me get strong enough to make the wall balls a little bit easier? Because the wall balls are going to be light anyway, right? So if you can bring your relative strength up and then work some plyo-based stuff into that, you're more elastic. All of a sudden, man, those become more efficient, and then your running's efficient as well. So it's trying to marry those two things together and having the volume and intensity fluctuate a little bit so you can recover from all of that work capacity, you know.
Right.
But straight away it's like looking at, well, how quick can I get that 1K down and become really efficient at it? How much volume can I attack to that every week? And then you've got an expectation of, well, if I can train, or if I can run 4 or 5 times a week, then it's going to go fast. But if I've only got 2 to 3 hits a week, then the expectation of improving that 1K is going to be a little bit slower than doing it 4 to 5 times a week, you know?
Right. That's a good way to go about it.
Yeah. Just having those numbers. And then, you know, like you strike me as a person that if you've got numbers to hit and a target, you're at it. Like you can go. Like you show up every week on the challenge workouts, you're knocking them out the park, you, Paul, as well. Like if there's a challenge there for you to hit, you go at it. Like the shape you're in right now, man, you're looking incredible.
Yeah, thank
Like
you.
pretty good, man.
Yeah.
So I would just set that number, look at what it is, and set a high standard for it as well. Like make the goal for the next 30 days think, this is going to be so hard. So if you hit it, phenomenal. Even if you stop just short, you're in a way better place than if you didn't set that target.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. Yeah, setting the target so I know what to do. 'Cause like last week I went for a run. I ended up doing a 10K run. It was the first run I did in a while, and I was out on the trail doing it. And then my tendons were a little sore for a couple of days after. So a little bit of ice and rest, and they came back, and I feel good now. But I guess it's just knowing, like if running 10K, 5K might not be beneficial if I can dial in these 1K times a little bit better, right?
Yeah. So thinking a thing like that's a lot of volume to hit in one go, just a straight 10K. Like HYROX is only 8. So maybe do a 5K first and then build to an 8, maybe. But if you can do 1K repeats and factor that in and have an assessment of, well, what's my 1K? What's my, I don't know, 500 meters? What's my 100 meters? And then you've got repeats at that. So now you know whether it's a power thing or it's a capacity thing. Right. So
With
if you've got,
the repeats, sorry to cut you off there. With the repeats, is it what's your rest interval? Like, is there a certain time you rest in between, or you kind of just take a short breather, like 30 seconds, a minute, and go back at it type of thing, or?
so if you're, let's say, for example, you can do, I don't know, 5 minute 30 1K, you want to keep that repeat as close to that as possible. So if I give you 30 seconds, you're not going to keep that up. So initially, you're going to have a pretty high amount of rest in between the repeats. And then as you get really conditioned, and you can see that endurance there, then you start to drop that rest period down in terms of the repeats.
Okay. Yeah,
Make sense?
that makes sense.
So you got some people doing, I don't know, 4 minute 1Ks, and they got 2 minutes off and they go again. So that's when you know you're going to be very aerobically efficient. But you are still going to need some light zone 1.5, zone 2 stuff as well, just to keep that aerobic capacity burning underneath. You know, so you got that low resting heart rate stuff. You got the aerobic system functioning really well. Because once you hit that, like 4 minutes on, 2 minutes off, that's tough, man. Like that's very, very tough.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, thank you.
No worries, man. So there's a goal. You got to do 4 minute 1K. That's a tough ass, man. That's
Yeah.
a good one.
I got long legs. I might be able to hit it once or twice, but I don't know how many times in a row.
Mate, do you know what? Like, think about the strength training that you need alongside that as well. And I think it's an often underlooked thing. So I sent a client this documentary clip, and it was showing, I think they actually used Usain Bolt for this. There was Usain Bolt. They had another athletic person running just might maybe jump up, and they had like a 70-year-old, and they showed the time of the feet hitting compared to one hitting the ground, like in the cadence repetition of each foot striking the floor. Usain Bolt compared to the middle distance runner compared to the 70-year-old, and the time duration between steps was identical. It's the same time. So what was the difference in the ability for Usain Bolt to run his 100 meters in 9.5 seconds compared to the 70-year-old? It's force output. How much force you can push into the floor and propel yourself forward. That was it. So it's your relative strength. So he had way more relative strength than anybody. He could generate so much force with striking the floor with his feet and just propel him forward. But the time that his foot was hit to strike the floor again was identical to the 70-year-old. So that was pretty interesting to me. I was like, fuck, okay. It's strength training. So if you can
Right.
have strength training alongside that, you'll improve your speed off the floor.
Yeah, cool.
Good man. Greg, run the show, bro.
So how are we thinking, Paul? What's your plans for next month that you have, and what can we do to help?
Right now, just get con work continue working on confidence for the barbell bench press and start working weight back up with the barbell back squat. But a couple weeks ago, I dropped the weight to actually get the depth. That was fixed pretty well. And it's getting to the point where it's easy, or felt easy last time I tried it. So I'm going to try to increase weight a little bit for that. And barbell bench press, I just increased the weight last time. When I tried to do it yesterday, nerves got set off when I was doing back squats. But all the stations were either had weights on them or people's equipment there. So look, they were in use, so I just swapped it out for a different type of bench press. So I have no idea if it's gonna hit again, but slowly making progress with those two things.
You so is your goal to just accumulate as much weight as you can in bench, dead, and squat?
Pretty much working towards the 1,000 pound club, but still a ways off from that. So just more continuing making progress with that.
And what's the biggest barrier for you with bench press? Is it just a psychological thing?
I guess I have to work past the psychological aspect of not having a spotter. So I have to be more careful with it. So I don't have too much weight on my chest that I can't get off if I fail.
And where's your weight now, and how are you planning on increasing in terms of weight, like in terms of increments?
Right now it is 145. The structure I have for that, the heavier part for the barbell bench. Flat barbell bench press is first 3 sets or 6 reps. Last one is 8 to 12. The last set is 90% weight. So it's 135. And then when I get to exceed 12 reps, so when I get to 13 for that, increase weights for that. Then for there are two other variations in the, well, three technically. There's an incline cable press where it's 3 sets of 8 to 12. When I get to 12 reps for each one, I increase weight, and that I don't really have an issue with. It's just getting the first, pushing up the first time from like the rest position, but after that, it's fine. And then dumbbell bench press, is like 10, 8, 6, 6 plus with that, with increasing weight each set. That ranges from like 50 to 65 pounds at this point. Then when I get to 10 reps on the last one, I just increase weight for across the board for that.
Oh, what type of kit do you have in your gym for the bench press? Where'd you press?
I don't really know how to describe it. It's just like a standard flat bench with barbells above it.
You have squat racks that you could bench in the rack?
Yes, but I don't know if I'd be able to get the benches because the benches might be in use to get them over there.
I would encourage you to see if you can get a bench over there, right? So it sounds like one of your limiters is psychologically, well, what happens if I can't get the bar off my chest, right? So I'd really get you to think about taking a bench over to the rack, set up the rack so the safety pins are at the height you need, at the depth that you need for the chest. So when you're down in that position, if you had to, you could just roll the bar under that under the pins and you're safe. And I would encourage you to fail. Not because it's going to give you more muscle mass or anything like that, but psychologically, you know what it feels like. and you know you're safe if you're on your own. Now, the other thing you could do, if I wouldn't encourage you to do this one, but I would, if I'm benching on my own, I never put collars on the end of the pins, on the end of the bars. Because if I get stuck, I'll just basically shift to the one side, I'll tilt it, and then the plates fall off, and then the other one side comes off, and then boom, they fall off. I'm not encouraging people to do that. That's a little bit like, can be a little bit hectic, but I would definitely encourage you to think about going into the rack with the bench, right? Because you're going to be totally safe. You just set the safety pins, fail on the pins, and just get used to failing. Like once a week, take that last set and just fail, man. Like, and you'll just become accustomed to it. It's like, okay, no problem. I'll just roll into the bar, take the plates off, get back to work. You know what I mean? Then try that on floor presses, man, if you're worried about that too. Like, start with a floor press. It's a floor press, you fail, like you can't hurt yourself. The plates hit the floor and the bar's like this far off your chest. Can't hurt yourself.
What's your reason for not having a spotter, Paul? Is it just because you don't trust anybody or
I
kind
don't like
of?
people enough to talk to
Like you, Dan.
Yeah. I laugh because that's exactly what I'm like. That's exactly what I'm like. Just genuinely though, all jokes aside, like I think kind of breaking that mental barrier, because the reality with a bench press is you're only going to fail in those first 2 inches. That's where typically people fail. It's never going to be from here to here. It's always going to be from here to here. And just having that mental assistance, and you saw that when you was at the camp, kind of just having somebody there. You don't even have to like them. You don't even have to like kind of converse with them other than, can I need you? If I need you, can you be there? That's massive from a psychological aspect for breaking down those barriers of breaking through plateaus, because the reality is, as soon as that bar starts to drop and you know at your top weight, you've all we all will almost already have psyched ourselves out because we know it's going to be heavy. So just I think kind of having a couple of force reps in there with a weight that is relatively your top weight at the moment breaks those kind of barriers down. So alongside obviously what both Ben and kind of Gav have mentioned, I think kind of just utilizing a spotter, and I mean I'm the same as you, mate. I'm not a people person, believe it or not, but kind of on certain exercises, especially a bench press or a dumbbell press, just the use of a spotter even for a week or two, just to kind of push you past those, because we've spoke about the bench press a lot, right, in regards to the plateaus that you've hit, just to be able to kind of push past that, mate, is it'll be game changing. Because we know as coaches that typically with a spotter you've got at least another minimum of 5% that you can add to the bar. Sometimes even certain exercises, something as high as 10% that we can add from a total load to the bar. And I think just feeling that weight will be game changing in your ability to then go in on your own and kind of press it. Because at the moment there'll be a neural a little cable that's kind of maybe come unstuck that just won't let you push past from a protective mechanism, right? So just utilizing a spot maybe for a week or two to push past that wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
Got some strategies. So if that's in place, Paul, how many pounds do you think you could add to the bench in 30 days?
I'm not sure. It's
No, you
going to be
don't.
tougher this. Well, I'm going to be traveling for a week in this next month, and then again in July, so.
Well, maybe not even the bench press. Maybe it's a floor press. It's a floor press, you're going to be safe.
Press.
Nothing stopping you doing floor press, right? You can hit more triceps. You can go heavy. If you can't lift it, the plates hit the floor and the barbell doesn't even touch you. Make sense?
Floor
So
press the
accessory movement for the bench press as well.
Okay.
Obviously, discuss that with Andrew too, right? So we're not trying to change your program, but just little things to think about in terms of that. If you want to just test yourself in terms of psychologically pushing past your barrier at the moment, those are great strategies to use as well.
Okay.
Gonna keep pushing you, mate.
I'll be sassy if you
That's push.
don't.
Jared, man, how are you set for the next 30 days, brother? You good to You're good to go. I know we made some tweaks to the diet the last, I think it's beginning of this week, so we should see some more fat loss coming off. Obviously, I want to start to look at where we're tapering you down now, getting to that 12, 11%, probably 10%. I think over the next 4 weeks, we should be able to hit that, no problem. But what I'm going to be looking to do is just tweak those macros as well as you start coming down, because I'm going to take, so obviously now your blood pressure is coming back into check, your cardiovascular works good. I might start tapering off one of the cardio sessions, and we can flip, and we can start hitting the weight training a little bit more, with a little bit more frequent, well, less frequency per body part, but like 4 times a week instead of full body. So we'll probably run to the end of this current full body hypertrophy approach, switch to the upper lower. You'll hit a little bit more volume per body part then, and we can start titrating the carbs up, bring a little bit of fats down a touch, so we can still get keep that deficit where we want to run it, and then we can start tapering calories up after that.
Yeah, sounds good. Like I said, I think this current little less volume on that one all out has changed my mindset a little bit for just getting as much as I can out of one set because that's all I got. So a little bit of a different mindset change from, like I said, you got two, three, four more sets.
Oh,
you stop that. Is he kicking back in?
There he is.
Sorry, Jared, we lost you there. Say it again, bro.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so like I said, dropping to that one set that we've done, I think has been a good game changer for me of just drilling out more for one set than, like I said, thinking three, four, or five sets down the road. So it's been a good mindset changer, just trying to squeeze as much as I can out of one set versus, like I said, thinking I have to save something for a third or fourth, fifth set.
Yeah. So the thought process, Jared, just to so you can understand what I think of when I'm doing stuff like that, is one, you're definitely gonna eke out as much as you can out of that set, because you're like, fuck, I've got no more sets to give for it. You know, I can't do another set. There's only one set to go. So you it forces you to really find where your true maximum is for that load. And more often than not, people will do it and they see that they got like 3 or 4 reps more than what they thought they could have. It comes out. But then also you found the true loading for that exercise. Makes sense? So you know the load now as well. So as we start to give you a little bit more volume, we've got your load set, we know how far you can push it. And then as we give you another set, I can start taping those carbohydrates back up, and all of a sudden you start to fill back out. You know, obviously you need to keep an eye on the volume so there's not too much inflammation going on and you can't suck carbs into the cells and stuff, but it just gives us that good soundboard to go off and go, right, boom, next phase, we're going to be doing hit this, and this. Because we know exactly where you can push to. And then psychologically, you've got the output there as well. And don't forget, we've brought calories down a touch as well. So we're still hitting that cardiovascular system a little bit more, but we've pulled calories down a little bit. So I don't want to give you too much volume. So that one all-out set is just enough right now, especially with the calories you've got going on. But we do still have the high day though, so the high day can get better as we start filling out too.
Yeah, no, I was quite surprised with that rain today because, like you said, with that long weekend away and not being training much as I usually would, to actually see it still trend down the right direction was pretty huge this morning. Like I said, was only batting 70% on the diet and training over the weekend, so still a pretty good number. The fact
Yeah.
that I didn't have all that training in and diet wasn't as perfect as it usually is.
No, it's good, man. Like your physiology's changed a lot. So remember that, right? So you gotta think we've done a lot of mitochondrial work. So your body's churning through ATP. It's making ATP very, very easily right now. So as soon as we make a little tweak, you can drop fat as easily as you want to. Right. So the trick now is gonna be filling you back out as you've got leaner. Like Dan's one of it, like a genius at this type of stuff as well, with the guys he's coached, but like being able to fill you back out as you stay lean, so you got that dense look as well. You're nice and shredded. That's going to be where we need to make a great play, right? So we've got a good maneuver now to go from 3 days a week to four. So you've got another carb day to hit. So this is where I can start to disperse the carbs back in, build you back up, and give you more high days than low days, things like that, right? So we'll be playing about with that coming up over the next, probably after the next 30 days, we'll start to consider those things.
Yeah, definitely. I've noticed the physique change over the last 10 days here since upping those carbs a bit.
Good, man. Good. So we're set, mate. Get ready. We gave you down another 2-3% over the next 30 days, and then we start to flip the switch. Okay. Anybody else need to go? Did Rob come back in? Or is Rob gone?
Rob's still
No,
here.
I'm here. Yeah,
Rob was.
probably two main things for me, I reckon. One, it was after the coaching call last week. I think Dan was talking about I've readjusted with Andrew my macros. I was in a sort of body composition cutting down phase, and I think just wasn't feeling great. Energy was low pretty consistently. And in hindsight, I think it just, running too low, running on cortisol, a lot of caffeine, wasn't shifting anymore. Like I was plateaued at about 102 kilos, just not getting there, getting that sort of the binge eating blowouts each week when I was just hunger was getting the better of me. So we reflected on that and brought it back up to sort of a 2350 calories, more carbs back in. And I just readjust the mindset to go, I gotta get into like out of that sort of cortisol mode, get into, sort of a lot of GPC work. So doing sort of doing three lifting sessions, three cardio sessions. Each lifting session is a compound with GBC afterwards. So like pretty high volume of sort of cardio type work, and then a lot of zone two. So there's that immediate little spike as I get more carbs back into my system. Your body suddenly puffs up again, and there's that mental hurdle of just put on weight, but I'm sort of shifting it into a longer term. I've got to get into a better. Just sort of a healthier way. Still want to be dropping the weight down, but more consistently over time. And the other one, we were about to do some benchmark testing. The day after I injured myself was supposed to be some Cooper's testing. We were going to do some like VO2 max testing, max push-ups, and just sort of re-benchmark and then set some goals around that performance-based stuff along with the body composition. So I'm keen now to go, hey, get back into a condition where I can go all out for some of that VO2 max testing, which I think is probably next week, based on how my leg's feeling now. Adjust to the new nutrition plan, do some sort of benchmarking of overall sort of fitness and endurance, and then set some goals based off of that.
Work, man. Good work. So the leg's still in it. You think you've got another week left with the leg injury, is it?
Yeah, look, I'm feeling pretty good now. Like I was doing some back squats yesterday, low weight. Like I had been back squatting sort of 120 kilos. I was back to just 50 kilos just to go through full range of movement and see how it felt. Right at the bottom of the range of movement, wasn't sort of sore, but I could feel it was engaging that sort of, it was around that hip flexor, but it's like right at the bottom. I could feel I was obviously tensing it as I pulled up, and I thought, oh yeah, it's starting to. So I just want to get back in that position where I can build back to the weights I was at before and my leg work. Split squats might take a little bit longer to come all the way back, but the other parts of my workout are all good. But it's still quite, I couldn't sprint at the moment. Anything that gets me my leg right into that extension, incline walking is good, elliptical is good. So the zone two is fine. But I couldn't go balls to the wall on a ergo or a sprint at the moment. So I just want to get that back into a position where I can do that testing. Because I found that when I shifted, been back into this stage, we shifted back to sort of the GBC type work maybe about a month ago with Andrew's shifted the program again. And I kind of clicked with my mindset that I probably enjoy it a bit more. We were doing the more strength-based, lower volume, some sort of like compound lifts, longer rests between it. And I sort of enjoyed it at the time, but shifting back to this style of training, I thought, oh, I think this clicks to some like stupid army part of my brain that, like that sort of, you keep moving, you're pretty quick in between your sets. I'm only sort of resting 30 seconds. It sort of just feels efficient and my brain kind of clicked to it quite a bit. So just sort of enjoying that.
You like to feel, you like that type of sensation when you're training, yeah?
Yeah, like I think it's, I would never take the full rest anyway. That, sometimes it would sort of be a 4 minute rest between squats. And it's almost like I feel like I can't give enough in a back squat without worrying about my injuring my back or losing my form. It's like I don't need 4 minutes to go again. And I sort of don't have time. I feel like I haven't got the most out of it. because then I'm so limited in number of sets I can get through before, you know, I'm in there at 5 a.m. before the kids wake up. So it's like I've got to get in, get home, get into my day. I feel like I get my average calories in a session goes up. Like my zone two session's probably 600 calories. A GBC session's probably 350 calories. If I do a heavy lifting session, I'm only burning 100 calories. And it's almost like it's just not, didn't get the most out of it.
So, man, I'd encourage you to think of disassociating weight training away from calorie expenditure. The signal we're trying to think of for weight training is muscle mass. Like, obviously you've got the neural effect of strength training, but the signal is going to be, I want to build muscle in the gym. It's not about that catalyst. So you are going to burn calories regardless of that anyway, but it's not going to be an effect of like, it's going to maximize fat loss anyway. But the goal is to maintain muscle tissue and build muscle tissue so fat loss is easy outside the gym. So it's getting the difference between those two. Obviously, the cardiovascular work can really have a good benefit around that as well. But if psychologically you like that feeling of keeping moving because it needs to be time efficient as well, you could potentially, because if you can still go with minimal rest and hit your next set, then the loading might not be optimized in terms of strength development, right? So it sounds like you're quite a bit away from that max loading for strength training potentially, right? So that's sometimes why you need 3 to 4 minutes to hit that same load again and repeat it over and over and over. So if you needed to reduce the sets down, what you could potentially chat to Andrew about is potentially something like cluster training or rest pause style training, where you can reduce, let's say you had 6 sets, you could probably reduce the amount of volume down into 3 sets. I think I did a reel on this today. I recorded a reel to put out, but one of, like, Jared will know this one pretty well, but one of the ones I do like is you could take something like a 5 RM lift, let's say it's on a bench press. So one for Paul here as well. And you, with that 5 RM, you only perform 3 reps. But after three, you rest 20 seconds and then you do another one. Then you rest 20 seconds, you do another one. Then you rest 20 seconds, you do another one. So it's a cluster method called 3-1-1-1. So with that 5 RM, you've done 6 reps, which when you think about it, it's like, fuck, I couldn't do more than five, but I've done six. And you just trick the body by giving it little intermittent rest periods in between. Then you rest 2 minutes after that, repeat it again. Right. So you probably only need, with the based off your ability to recruit muscle fibers, you might need slow amounts of volume to get there and not overloading your nervous system to really drive it as much. So you might be able to get away with that type of stuff as well.
I think it was kind of exercise dependent as well. Like what Paul was saying resonates with me a bit. If it was something like incline chest with dumbbells, I definitely would notice that. Like I could really push my. I know my form was good. I could go to failure, but without going, oh no, I just completely tanked my form. And I'd notice if I rushed my rest, I'd be like, well, I couldn't hit that again, or I couldn't move up in the weights. It was more probably back squats was one, because it was as I'd get heavier, I'd go, well, hang on, I'm losing my core. Or no, I had to bail on that sort of an inch or two too high. I just couldn't get down low enough at that weight. Or I would feel myself like, oh, hang on, I'm rocking back on my heels, like my toes are coming off the ground, and I'd be losing my form. So that was almost my limiter. And it was like I could go heavier than this, but not with good form. But I found the weight that I was lifting at, it wasn't that like, oh my God, I need to go sit down for 2 minutes because I'm completely gassed. It was just if I go heavier, I'd lose the core stability, or I'd start to duck bill my back, and I'd be going, oh no, hang on, feeling that in my lower back. I've lost my form, got to be careful. And probably a bit similar with the bench, barbell bench. It's probably a tall guy flex, but if I'm in the squat rack with the collars on, I hit my elbows on them. So my shoulders are too broad to bench with the safety bar there. I have to come into more of a tricep sort of bench. So I have that same problem that Paul has. It's kind of I've done the worm, like wiggling off the hook, like you mentioned, without the collars, and you get some odd looks when you're slamming the plate down to get out. But it's probably that similar, like I would get up to kind of maybe that the 100 kilo, and I'd go, I would, if there was someone around, I'd grab someone
to spot, but it's just a stupid time in the morning. So often the gym is pretty empty.
Yeah, so it sounds like the two lifts for the bench press for you, one floor press would probably be better because you haven't got a, you got the floor to work with, right? So you're obviously going to use partial range of motion there, and then use dumbbells for the other lift for the bench. So you can use the flat bench with dumbbells. Thus, two things in terms of exercise selection for you. But it sounds like when you go heavy, it's not neural, it's structural. So your limit is more core development, really putting in a lot of volume and strength around those areas there and any weak links in the chain, right? Dan's a master at this type of stuff in terms of posture. So I'm going to hand over to Dan as well, but just listen to the way you speak about what your limiters are to put strength on or to increase strength. You've got some structural stuff to build up there. Cause as you put, so you have to consider this as well. As you push strength in one area and those other areas don't catch up to it, they're going to be your weaker link now again. So there's all, you're always playing catch up with something. So this is what we have to take into consideration. Like Jared will know this when we used to teach the Poliquin group stuff, where you're looking at ratios from specific lifts. So we used to teach how specific lifts, let's say, for example, the lower body, the back squat was the main 100% lift. And based off the back squats, your front squats ideally as a good structural ratio to minimize risk of injury, your front squat should be 85% of your back squat. Your deadlift should be 125% of your back squat. We had like split squat should be about 41 to 42% of your back squat. Like we would have all these ratios to make sure that, okay, well, this is, if I'm pushing this lift, so let's say my minimizing lift or my limit of lift was the front squat. And it was like 70%. And I just focused on that over and over and over. I still back squat, but the main lifts that I need to focus on is front squat. So I put all my eggs in that basket. Those are where all the methods are going to go. This, where all the structural balance thing's going to go around this lift, what's limiting it. And we push that. And all of a sudden I retest after 12 weeks. And now the percentage of my front squat is now above 85%. Right. So that's above. So that's above and beyond. So now my limit is my back squat. I need to push the back squat up another 5%. So then that comes down to maintenance and I push the back squat. So for you, in terms of the structural stuff, as you're pushing strength in one area, something else is getting weaker relative. It's not that it's weak, it's relative to the other stuff. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know, like
down, yeah, it makes sense.
Postural biomechanics stuff as well, but that's where my head goes in terms of strength training.
Yeah. I like that. But I also would add on to that, what's the goal? Because if a goal is to solely build muscle, for big guys like me and you, Rob, like I always say, I don't really back squat. I don't really do too much. Well, I definitely don't do off the floor deadlifts. It's more rack pulls. And I typically don't really bench just because I know structurally for how long my wingspan and my length is. It's just not an exercise that I'm able to elicit as much tension into the working muscle. So if the goal is specifically to put on muscle, because I would always categorize, and Gav was perfect with what he said from a strength ratio perspective, it's looking at the goal. And if a goal is putting on muscle, you know, our view around kind of skill acquisition and force output. For me, I'd probably work more on the force output to build tissue because we can direct tension into the working area, especially being 6 foot plus, which we know we're not built to kind of put on chunks and chunks of muscle because our kind of limb lengths are really long. So I think for me, it's using everything that Gav said, but also from a biomechanical standpoint, is there greater cause for us to use more force output machines to direct tension to the working muscle as well? So using static press machines or kind of, for me, absolutely adore the hack squat and being quite long torso, the pendulum. Like, I know a lot of people don't like the pendulum, but the pendulum fits me perfectly because my torso is long in comparison to my femur and tib and fib length. So it's just knowing your own biomechanics. And again, if a goal is strength, then yes, use the big three, but your limitations with structure are always going to be, it's always going to be your core. Like being a tall guy, like your limitation in going heavier in any sort of squat or pull is only ever going to be your core. You can get it as strong as an ox, but that will always be the limiting factor. So for me, can we be more specific with, if the goal, if you're going for a strength phase, yes, we drive numbers up, but if it's tissue recurring that we're looking for, then being more specific and detailed with exercise selection. We know for as big guys as well, anybody that's trained over 4 or 5 years, typically we know the greatest way to elicit more tissue is extremity ranges as well. So looking at the muscle and breaking it down into relatively lengthened, relatively shortened in that mid range, and getting sexy with kind of exercise selection across the breadth of a program. So like we've said, it's very rare. There's certain exercises we can use that train a muscle for its full contractile length from short to long. But from an exercise or a kind of program design standpoint, just making sure you're covering all bases and you're not overtaxing something and increasing the risk of injury. Because like we said, me and Gav on a bench press, the distance I've got to send the kind of bar to get the same contraction that Gav will with the length of our arms comparatively is probably an extra third on Gav's arm length. So can we get more specific? Because I know for me personally, putting on tissue doesn't come from a big three. It doesn't come from a kind of performance and from a functionality standpoint, of a big exercise and important to put in? Absolutely. But if I'm going for a phase of building tissue and being able to direct as much working tension into the target tissue, then I probably won't use those bigger exercises. It's getting more specific with the extremity of range stuff, but getting more locked in, stable, using more force output exercises, so I can take the emphasis of having to use too much internal stability and just focus my mind on kind of the tension on the working muscle.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. And again, it's a phasic approach like anything else. And I think we still as big guys still need to work on strength, but I think going to kind of maximal effort on things like squats, deads and bench for as guys that are 6'2", 6'3" plus, personally, is it important? I'd argue no. Like I said on the last camp that was on, I don't believe anybody really, when it comes to body composition or building tissue, needs to deadlift from the floor, because to have everything move synergistically how it should from kind of top of the cranium all the way down to the Achilles and the feet, nobody's ever perfectly balanced through life, through sport, through a number of injuries, etc., etc. There's too much that has to be in perfect alignment. And the risk versus reward of an off-the-floor deadlift for me with general population clients is too great. It's too great. The reward of a deadlift is not as great as locking in and maybe training the hamstrings and calves in isolation in both a lengthened and a shortened position, and then maybe doing a knee-height rack pull, if that makes sense, if we're looking to work the erectors and kind of the rest of the posterior chain. So from my body composition background, I know Gav's from a Poliquin-esque kind of background where it was the big three, and Charles really loved the kind of pull-ups, the deadlifts. I come from more of a bodybuilding slash kind of devil is in the detail of targeting muscles in relative isolation, because we know we can't target muscles and totally isolate a muscle because they work synergistically, right? So just breaking it down even further and just looking at specific phases where we're just trying to preference the target tissue that we're looking at in the relative length that we're looking to try and create more strength in.
Perfect.
Good, boys. Bit of a biomechanics lesson there, boys. Mr. Smith, great as always. Boys, any other questions from you guys tonight? So everybody knows the next 30 days targets for sure based off this one. Jared's locked in. Thompson's locked in. Gonna kick your ass on Saturday, big boy. Ready, mate. If it's still hot, we're going on a cold. We're going to the cold plunge if it's still this hot on the weekend. Everybody else set? Any questions from any of you guys before we wrap up today? Well, good, boys. Thank you so much for your time today. Have a great end of the week. Have a good start to the month. And as always, if you've got any questions or anything, just drop into the WhatsApp group, boys. We're always there for you. So keep us posted on how your week's going. And Ben Bukulski, Dan Smith, good to see you.
Boys, good to see you, boys.
Sleep, boys.
Okay, boys. Bye-bye.